Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, let's get it over with.
Yeah, what did you think of her dress? 312-642-5600. What did you think of her hairdo? What did you think of the service, the ceremony? The royals' reaction, because she did bring the Episcopal, the presiding bishop of the United States, Michael Curry, to the chapel there in Windsor, and he got a little liberal.
Said Episcopal Church.
Well, no, but there's the old Episcopal Church, and then there's the current Episcopal Church. They're old English Episcopal Church, and he was He let his feelings known about slavery, about Martin Luther King.
Can't have a wedding without a discussion of slavery, carbon emissions, and the like.
Exactly, because they flow so beautifully together. And then you got to move your hands. But I don't have my computers down, so I'm going to need you to press some buttons for me. How about
the power of love,
number one, please?
Martin Luther King once said, and I quote, "We must discover the power of love, the redemptive power of love. And when we do that, we will make of this old world a new world. For love, love is the only way. There's power in love. Don't underestimate it. Don't even over-sentimentalize it. There's power. Power in love."
Great. I'll under-sentimentalize it. And he
did you know
continued,
that love was patient and love was kind?
I do now.
"There were some old slaves in America's antebellum South who explained the dynamic power of love and why it has the power to transform. They explained it this way. They sang a spiritual, even in the midst of their captivity. It's one that says there is a balm in Gilead, a healing balm, something that can make things right. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul." And one of the stanzas actually explains why. They said, "If you cannot preach like Peter, and you cannot pray like Paul, you just tell the love of Jesus, how he died to save us all. Oh, that's the balm in Gilead."
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's with all this Jesus talk at a wedding in the UK?
But no, then he stepped back from the lectern, and he was moving his arms, and he was... You know, but the reaction from the royals was hysterical. I mean, it was Queen Elizabeth. She did one of these, like, "Oh, is it going to stop yet?" Prince Charles and his son, they seemed to be laughing. Kate Middleton, who never breaks character, she's very stern. She got a smile. Because they didn't know what was going on. Uh-huh. They didn't expect this.
Yeah.
But then he talked about carbon emissions. And listen to this gobbledygook, number five, please. Thank you, sir.
"Anybody get here in a car today?
No, I
don't. An automobile?
Carriages.
Nod your heads if you did, I'm guessing. I know there were some carriages. But those of us who came on cars, fire, the controlled, harnessed fire, made that possible. I know that the Bible says, and I believe it, that Jesus walked on the water. But I have to tell you, I didn't walk across the Atlantic Ocean to get here. Controlled fire in that plane got me here. Fire makes it possible for us to text and tweet and email and Instagram and Facebook and socially be dysfunctional with each other."
Yeah, well, it's a pro-fossil fuels riff there. I kind of like that. It's okay, great.
Did you watch, though, just any of the royal wedding? Did
you
get up
mind?
At 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning?
No.
No? You didn't see what everybody was wearing.
See, you better...
The mom had to take her, Meghan Markle's mom had to take her gold hoop nose ring out and put in a little diamond stud.
Keep punching because, you know,
really?
It's almost time for the bell. What else you got?
Okay, everybody's reaction. Here you've got, oh, excuse me. You have Al Roker, who's supposed to be a serious weatherman, you know, because weather is very serious.
Yeah.
And he was like a little school guy. I mean, he might have done something in his pants.
Did he get so excited he dumped in his pants again, like when he was at the White House?
I think that could have happened. Listen.
This is the moment they've been waiting for. And there they go.
Come on, Al.
Meghan!
You got him.
Meghan! Hey! How are you?
No, it gets worse. Number eight, please.
Oh, my gosh. That was exciting. Wow. Oh, my.
It was close.
Like,
it was close.
She
saw you.
Ladies, please.
Oh, and they weren't the only ones. You know who Katie Tour is and Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC?
I do, yes.
Do you want to hear them go nuts?
Not really, but okay.
Thank you.
I think I got a little wave.
I think she heard Al.
A little something.
I think you did, Al.
That was exciting. Wow. And there goes the queen.
Amazing.
Yay. Oh,
yay.
My God.
Sounds like a bomber. Yay, the queen.
I honestly
against home state. So the message today is love, inclusion, and happiness. Here they are, right here. Meghan!
Inclusion? It's a wedding. What are you talking about?
No.
No one is
here. Are you
so
seeing good. This?
Yes, we are.
The horses.
They're still going for that
amazing.
We're going to take that joy. We're going to take that. Katie Turner.
I mean, it was
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line 64636DA turnkey.pro text line. How embarrassed are you for Amy that she spent 4 hours on Saturday morning watching this?
What? It's history. You see, an American actress marrying a prince. This does not happen but once in your lifetime. And I was telling my Peyton and Eli that, and they could care less, because guess what I did last night? I watched it again from 8, because they were home, and I said, you know, I want you to see this. This is history. She's an American. They could care less.
Mm. And that riveting commentary didn't persuade them, huh?
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a little history.
And that concludes our royal wedding coverage.
What about our hair and... the shoes.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, so it turns out the informant used by the FBI in 2016 to gather information on the Trump campaign was not some previously unknown top secret asset whose exposure as an operative could jeopardize lives. Quite the contrary. His decades of work for the CIA, including his role in an obviously unethical, if not criminal, spying operation during the 1980 presidential campaign, is quite publicly known. That's Glenn Greenwald reporting at The Intercept. The spy outed by the New York Times and the Washington Post, not by name, but by description such that everybody who already knew the name. The name is ultimately going to be leveled up. And his name is Stefan Halper. A Cambridge professor, a former CIA spy, whose father-in-law was a deputy CIA director, who, as Greenwald mentions, was involved in an operation to aid Ronald Reagan against Jimmy Carter in the 1980 presidential campaign that was unethical, if not illegal, as Greenwald reports. And the fascinating response from the Democrats, fascinating, caught in a lie. These intelligence agencies, including a new FBI director, Christopher Wray. So we're talking about institutional corruption from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, these same agencies. And what's the response? What's the response? Jim Clapper. You ready for this?
Oh, clap on.
Clap off. Clap on, clap off, James Clapper, former DNI director on... the revelation of this
spy.
You say spy, I say informant.
Oh, that's right.
And I call BS.
The focus here, and as it was with the intelligence community, is not on the campaign per se, but what the Russians were doing to try to instantiate themselves in the campaign or to influence or leverage it. So if there was someone that was observing that sort of thing, that's a good thing, because the Russians pose a threat to the very basis of our political system.
So you don't understand, they were protecting Trump. The steps they took, these intelligence agencies and senior level personnel at FBI, this was all to protect President Trump. Don't you understand? Because of the Russian threat to our very representative republic.
Excuse me if I laugh there.
I mean, it's remarkable spin, but I guess what else could you say when you're caught with your hand in the cookie jar? I'm protecting you from the cookies. And that's essentially what Jim Clapper is arguing. Kim Strassel, on with Tucker on Friday night, having none of it. Kim Strassel from The Wall Street Journal has done some of the best reporting on this from the outset.
Can you think of any time in history when this has happened or when anyone thought it was okay for... By the way, the Department of Justice is being run by one political party, surveilling, electronically surveilling, and then also spying on the leading candidate and for a nominee for the opposing party running for the presidency.
And Mr. Halper, his contract, along with Carter Page's contractual relationship with the FBI, expired in September 17. But he was paid something on the order of over 2 years, something on the order of $450,000. Mr. Halper was to be embedded in the Trump campaign, you know, to protect Trump. Strassel went on to point out that the problem isn't just with the Obama administration, although we'll get to them, and the senior leadership of Department of Justice and FBI, CIA there, but also with Trump's Department of Justice.
The games that the Department of Justice is playing in terms of coming clean with this information. They have now flouted a subpoena from Chairman Nunes for weeks, saying that there's no way they can give him the information he wants because it might put this source of theirs at risk. And yet they have, over the past couple weeks, leaked more information about this person than was prior known and would be known. And they're doing it all in order to get friendly media to write stories about how they did everything right in 2016, which, of course, we know they didn't.
Halper made contact with Page, Carter Page, made contact with George Papadopoulos, who's currently pled guilty to lying to the FBI. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the meeting, remember, Papadopoulos had with the Australian diplomat was supposed to be what prompted this investigation.
Does he still live in his parents' basement in Ravenswood?
Not keeping track of him. I don't know. I think he is, though, watching Rahm's blue dress.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think that he's got the Rahm's wedding dress there.
Right, to make sure.
To make sure that Rahm maintains his residency.
They only live two blocks away from each other.
Also, Halper made contact with Sam Clovis, the national campaign co-chairman of Trump. Remember,
we've had Sam Clovis on many times.
He's an Iowa guy. Yeah. One email between Stefan Halper and Carter Page was unearthed. It's from July 28th of 2017. Dear Carter, I thought I'd write as the summer wears on to ask how you are and what your plans are at this point. It seems attention has shifted from the collusion investigation to the contretemps within the White House and how or if Mr. Scaramucci will be accommodated there. I must assume this gives you some relief. We are here in Virginia enjoying a warm but quiet summer. Be in touch when you have time would be great to catch up. Huh. Say they first met, Carter Page and Halper, at some symposium in Cambridge on July 11th and 12th of 2016, just a few days after Page's speech in Moscow that put a target on him as some kind of Russian agent. Halper approached Page at the Cambridge event, July of 16, and struck up this friendship that continued on. And that email is some indication of that. But all the timeline now of what the FBI says is their investigation, the basis for the investigation, it is all now under scrutiny. It is all now having to be rethought because what we're learning about what they were doing and with whom they were doing it does not square with the story that they've been telling us for the past year and a half. That combined with the relatively, I would think, incredible development You say spy, I say informant, potato, potato, that you had the Department of Justice, I mean the FBI, I should say, the FBI with Department of Justice knowledge, the FBI, under a previous administration, spying on the major party nominee or leading candidate, then nominee, of your opposition party, weaponizing law enforcement, the most powerful federal agencies for electoral political ends.
So it is comparable to Watergate.
At minimum. At minimum. Good morning, Dan and Amy. So you buy in Jim Clapper and Representative Adam Schiff from Area 51. Their spin that, look, this whole thing, now that the spy has been outed, Stefan Halper, this whole thing to embed a spy and an informant or informant in the Trump campaign, as well as everything that you see going on, this is an elaborate ruse by law enforcement and intelligence agencies to protect Trump. That's what's actually going on here. It's a little bit of a misdirection play, get smart style. But now Adam Schiff, he's still upset that the spy was outed because he's hewing to the line that has been offered by the FBI and Department of Justice that national security is at stake.
When did you become aware of this FBI informant?
You know, I don't want to characterize what this individual may or may not be, but I do want to say the Justice Department, the FBI, even the White House, although clearly not the president, has said that revealing information about this individual could compromise people's lives. It could betray a relationship with our allies. It could compromise the investigation. And the president's response and Chairman Nunes, Jordan and Gowdy and others is bring it on. We don't care. Whatever is in the service of the president, we're willing to do. This is a dramatic and new and destructive low, I think, for the Congress of the United States. This claim by the president, the suggestion by Giuliani that there is a political spy embedded in the Trump campaign is nonsense.
So you do want to characterize the spy or the informant.
Well, and last week, the left and all the lefty politicians were saying that it's not a spy, it's a source. You know, I mean, so.
Spy, source, informant. I mean, the important thing is, one, he shouldn't be revealed because lives are at stake. You heard Adam Schiff there.
Right.
Trey Gowdy, Devin Nunes, the president, they are being cavalier with the lives of others by, they didn't reveal it. The Washington Post and the New York Times did by providing that particular description over the weekend of Stefan Halper, number one. And then number two, don't worry, because this is all to protect Trump. I mean, it's just, it is remarkable. It's remarkable, and also it's remarkable how underreported this is, how the lack of concern. I mean, Mark Penn, a former Hillary Clinton advisor and Bill Clinton advisor we had on the show on Friday, I mean, he's talking about shutting down Mueller in the interest of all of us. In other words, in the interest of not having the machinery of the state, particularly the law enforcement and intelligence machinery, being politicized by who's ever in power to use against opponents. So he recognizes the precedent that's being set here. Everybody else, it's kind of like, let's argue let's argue about spy versus informant versus source. Well, here's what we know. We know the spy informant source had a 14-month contract, along with, and as did Carter Page, that ended in September of 17, the same month the FISA warrant against Carter Page ended. We know he's making overtures to George Papadopoulos about Russian collusion, about the so-called DNC email hacking. So, but he's a source. I mean, he's a spy. He's an informant. He's got a background as a spy. So by definition, he is a spy.
He is a spy. His dad's a former spy.
Deputy director for a father-in-law.
Father-in-law of CIA, right?
Yeah. And so we know all this, and we're supposed to treat this with a shoulder shrug. It's remarkable to me.
312-642-5600 is our Turnkey Debt Pro answer line. 64636, type in DA. Then a quick comment. I mean, should the FBI be dismantled? Should they? What should we do? If we do nothing, then this kind of behavior is going to continue.
Jordan Forest Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I remember James Comey saying that he did not want to influence the election. Remember, with the Hillary investigation. And now, I think his logic would be, well, as long as the spy was kept secret, that's not influencing the election. So, we stand by what we did.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call, Jordan. And James Freeman, the Wall Street Journal, points this out, too. Where is the discussion of Obama in all this entire story?
Oh, yeah, I'm right.
We're talking about his Department of Justice, his FBI, his CIA, the personnel that are holdovers, like the John Brennans and Jim Clappers of the world. So clearly, as Freeman points out, Obama didn't give much credence to the whole Trump-Russian collusion narrative. But nonetheless, he had senior-level agents of his administration across agency engaged in the conduct we're starting to understand piecemeal. So what about questions to him? Doesn't the public deserve an explanation from what did or didn't go on from what we're learning from President Obama, his perspective on it? I don't know. It's sort of like the IRS scandal. The IRS being weaponized to target people based on their political and religious beliefs. And it just, I don't think the danger of that was fully appreciated and certainly was not fully reported. No. And I see the same thing here.
Aren't you hoping like, after everybody sneaks in, the royal wedding's over, that maybe now the mainstream media, who was all giddy because Meghan Markle waved at them while she was in the carriage.
Yeah, I mean,
so they might concentrate on real news now.
Sure, right.
I mean, that's what scares me. You see them, falling all over the royals and all that, and which I'm guilty of too, but they're at a different extent. And they're the same people that are supposed to be reporting the news on this.
By the way, were Charlie Gard and Alfie Evans in attendance at the royal wedding?
Fergie was there. She was invited.
Yeah. Well,
just in case you.
Sure, this is my bad. I'm focused on the wrong thing. This is the royal wedding weekend, and the fact that you have the details of a counterintelligence operation by one political party against another using the machinery of the state and undermining the legitimacy of this representative Republican form of government we have. I'm sorry. That's my fault. I'm interrupting the fanfare around Meghan.
Yeah, well, President Trump took to Twitter. He was on fire yesterday. I hereby demand and will do so officially tomorrow that the Department of Justice look into whether or not the FBI, DOJ infiltrated or surveilled the Trump campaign for political purposes. And if any such demands or requests were made by people within the Obama administration. So he's the first one to talk about the former president.
Yeah, well,
in a roundabout way, but.
So the internal investigation across agency would be good. I mean, we're getting at least some details, some responsible oversight from Horowitz at FBI, but it seems like this is bigger than FBI, that we need some kind of oversight at CIA. We need some kind of oversight of Rosenstein and, to some extent, Jeff Sessions at FBI. And if it's not going to come from the executive, meaning the President of the United States, and it's not going to come from the media, you start to wonder where it's going to come from. And what are the implications if it doesn't?
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, this story was breaking right as we were getting off the air on Friday morning. Of course, talking about the high school shooting outside of Galveston, Texas, Santa Fe High School. 10 dead, 10 injured. Suspect in custody who has now been arraigned. The slaughter was carried out with
a shotgun and a .38 revolver.
Hmm.
So not an assault type rifle. No bump stocks or extended magazines were used. It was I used to own a 38 revolver, and when you shoot, I mean, you have to pull the hammerhead back every time before you shoot.
That's going to complicate the gun banner's narrative, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So unless you want to be in the business of banning all guns, which now we get the truth. And I appreciate it because it confirms what we know to be true. And the law-abiding gun owner is ahead of the learning curve, of course. Dave Holmes, editor-at-large for Esquire, writing...
Well, you got into a little Twitter thing with him, didn't you?
I raised the issue.
Yeah.
His piece, okay, now I actually do want to take your guns. I just wanted to drop you a line and let you know, this is an open letter to the NRA, drop a line and let you know that I now actually do want to take your guns, all of your guns, right now. It wasn't always this way. I have responsible gun owners in my family. I've never been a fan of shooting things myself, but guns do seem to have brought joy into the lives of the some people I love. As long as they're restored properly, I never had a problem with them being around. Yeah, as if that's what guns are for, bringing joy. I believe that we should place a hurdle or two between a psychopath and an AR-15, but that's about as ardent as I got. Live and let live, that was my policy, even with death machines. That has all changed, and you changed it. So when we law-abiding gun owners say that what the gun banners try and do is take whatever increment they can, but never forget their objective is to ban private ownership of guns. Dave Holmes over at Esquire confirms this to be true, and I appreciate that. Because what else do you say in the wake of yet another high school massacre, but one carried out with a shotgun and a 38, and not one of these weapons of war, at least as characterized by the D.C. press corps and the left? What do you say? Then you have to cop to it. I want to take them all. And he's not the only one. Former professional Obama rebounder, Arne Duncan, he took to Twitter. He's got an idea. He's a real incubator of thoughtful public policy.
What's his idea?
Parents should pull their children out of school until elected officials pass more gun control laws. Boycott school until we get more gun control laws.
We already have gun control laws on the book. The problem is that people don't follow the laws.
We need more. More.
Well, the shotgun and the 38 revolver belonged to his father. So that's how he took those from his dad. And
I want to hear people's response to the big ideas coming from the left here. Take all your guns. Don't send your kids to school. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. I mean, don't send your kids to school. That's going to turn a lot of parents into Republicans. The last thing I want to do is my kids at home all the time and be having to manage that.
Yeah. No, you don't want to do that. There's a lot of blame. I mean... So then you had the lieutenant governor from Texas, Dan Patrick. He says that we have devalued
life. En fuego. Oh, different Dan.
Yeah, and he was on one of the Sunday. He was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos talking about that, how we've devalued life because of the use of violent video games, and we have abortion. And can we play him?
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't have any control.
Can we be surprised in this nation? We have devalued life. Whether it's through abortion, whether it's the breakup of families, through violent movies, and particularly violent video games, which now outsell movies and music. Psychologists and psychiatrists will tell you that students are desensitized to violence, may have lost empathy for their victims by watching hours and hours of video violent games.
I don't know if you can make a causal link to that. It's a bit dubious, but we do know that the shooter at Santa Fe High School was singing Another One Bites the Dust when he would shoot somebody.
Yeah, and then he'd go, woohoo! And then one classroom, he jumped in, he said, surprise! And then started firing a shotgun. One person that he targeted was Shanna Fisher, 16-year-old. She was one of the first persons that was shot. According to her mother, Sadie Rodriguez, he had been making advances toward her. He was kind of stalking her. He wanted to date her. And on Thursday, she confronted him and said, enough. You know, please leave me alone. And then the next day, he wore a Born to Kill t-shirt and came to school.
How do you do that when someone says no, they don't want to be with you? He had to been mentally unstable. You know, nobody was paying attention to him. He's going to school wearing upside down crosses, you know, in trench coats.
And a hammer and sickle.
I just don't get it. I don't understand why. Why would he do that? Why would you take someone's life?
I mean, she made a point. She thinks it's the school's fault because there were warning signs there and nobody did anything. His friend, Dustin Seren, he described him. He said he wore trench coats all the time, even when it was 90 degrees out. Here's Devin.
He wears a trench coat every day and it's like 90 degrees out here. I talked to him a few times because I used to play football in ninth grade. And he's nice, but he's real quiet. He keeps to himself. He doesn't talk to very many people. Like, he'll be walking around with his trench coat on, with headphones in, doesn't say anything.
I mean, this is so chilling. Disturbing. I mean, this is something like a slasher movie. But obviously, this happened in real life. This is surprise MF for the shooter hollered as he fired into the closet wall, killing two of the half dozen students who had barricaded them inside. "Are you dead?" he later asked from the other side of the closet.
They said he was never vocal ever in his years attending that school, but he was vocal on Friday. And he seemed to be more empowered with every shot he took, what one kid said. I mean, it's... I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know how it's going to stop. You know, after Parkland, everyone said, oh, this is going to be the last shooting. No, it's not.
The kids, the celebrated kids from Parkland, not the valedictorian, Kyle Kashev, who is the pro-Second Amendment kid from Parkland, he just tweeted out that he's number one in his class at Parkland.
Oh, good for him.
Now, for the other side of the story, Emma Gonzalez.
She's back. That's the thing. I saw all those kids getting like, oh, please, I need to watch the royal wedding.
You don't need an AR-15 to protect yourself in bed from a robber at night. You don't need an AR-15 to have fun at a shooting rage. Go serve your effing country if you want to shoot a weapon. That's from Emma Gonzalez at Parkland. Okay.
Well, one person that I spoke with over the weekend said, you know what? We should just arm all of our children. We should teach our kids how to shoot. No, so that they can protect themselves.
Well, I mean, I'm all for educating children about guns. That's the Eddie Eagle program that the NRA has. Teach them to be responsible gun owners from an early age. But, I mean, you've had massacres at grade schools. Obviously, you're not going to arm second graders in Newtown. Mm-hmm.
But there's at the high school level, that's what he was suggesting. Mm. I mean, I couldn't even watch on Friday. I was sick to my stomach.
Paul in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Hey, I'm a grandfather. I've got three daughters, six grandkids, and I'm going to insist that they pull their children out of school in about 2.5 weeks for 3 months. And that's just about the end of that one.
You mean for summer vacation?
Absolutely.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Paul. I guess he's having a little fun at Arnie Duncan's expense with pulling your kids out of school permanently. Yeah, he's not on board for that.
They had armed officers there at the school, and eventually they got him. But then somebody pulled the fire alarm, so then half the kids were running out because they thought there was a fire, and it was just chaotic.
Well,
but how to stop it? I mean, metal detectors, I know parents don't like, you know, when we go high school shopping here because we are at CPS, no one likes to see metal detectors. And that's like, oh, are there metal detectors there? Yeah, that's a good sign. Even the precious little geniuses who go to Walter Payton Prep have metal detectors at their school.
Mm.
Did I sound bitter?
You sounded a little bitter.
A little bitter?
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And Jones Prep. They have metal detectors.
And at Amundsen's, everybody's armed.
So. It's called Amundsen, and it's the Amundsen Vikings. Yes.
Amundsen. Yeah, yeah. Potato, potato. Potato. Spy, informant, source.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This story, obviously, not as widely reported as the Santa Fe High School shooting for understandable reasons, but on Friday morning, this stripper and porn actor, dude.
Yeah, this is not Stormy Daniels' first cousin. This is a man.
A man, baby.
Under down under, yeah.
He, South African native, he walked inside a South Florida hotel owned by Donald Trump, the Doral.
In Miami.
National Resort in Doral early Friday morning. And he got in a firefight and a chase with police while ranting about Trump, Barack Obama, P. Diddy.
Yeah, he was upset with P. Diddy for some reason.
Mm.
And he was draped in an American flag, and he took a gun. It was firing into the ceiling. So he didn't point the weapon at anybody, and then the cops came, and there was a chase.
And they did point the their weapons at him, which was appropriate, and they shot him in the leg, and he was taken into custody on charges of attempted murder. Bizarre, but he also loved Melania. He was sort of stalking, effectively, Melania. Sort of cyber stalking, or just obsessing about her, I guess, more so than anything. But his posts on social media, Flotus rocks. She sets the example of mannerism. She counters Trump's aggressiveness. He also was wont to quote Notorious B.I.G. So there's, you know, there's a wide range of interest from this guy.
And he, you know, he's got an interesting past. So he was a fitness instructor. It says he's a real estate investor, a manager at Pegasus. And for 5 years, he was a regular stripper for Dancing Bear. I'm sure you're familiar. That's a South Florida website that
I'm
produces
familiar
videos.
With it.
It's a Dancing Bear. And then he did some things to male dancers. It's all whatever.
It actually, you know, I hear there's, you know, it's always interesting. There's some scuttlebutt about the number of assassination attempts maybe that have just been interdicted at the planning stage against the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have a friend of a friend who's in the space, and I'm told like as many as a dozen assassination attempts have been prevented by Secret Service. And I suspect that's true of a lot of presidents, and it could be somebody who's just unhinged and is plotting, you know, not something elaborate like movie quality. But it's just you have one-off people, and this is the importance of Secret Service and the importance of law enforcement. And so when law enforcement is compromised, as it has been at the FBI, it's a big deal.
It's not just this Trump-owned property either. My friend just left the Trump Tower. She worked there. She couldn't take it anymore.
In Chicago?
Yes. Huh. She said there were, at the height of it, she said there were bomb threats every day. Every day. And now it's about once a week. But her fellow employees, whether they worked in the beauty salon there, the restaurant shut down for a while because nobody was going to it because people that walk in there would get hit by rocks. And then she's like, the media is not even discussing the story about how bad it is to work there. I mean, people that are registered Democrats that work at the Trump Tower, work in the hotel, work for the condominium, were getting harassed every day going into work. She said it was not worth it.
Well, that doesn't sound like the tolerant Democrats in Chicago that I know.
Yeah, no, because they have how many protests? Remember they had the moon in, too, when everybody mooned it?
Sure,
and
I do.
She said, these people are animals. These are not normal people, and they
made life hell for her. Hey, animals.
Oh.
Are you forgetting their spark of divinity? I mean, I hate to quote noted theologian Nancy Pelosi, but we don't use the term animals to describe people that cut out the hearts of others like MS-13 gangbangers. So please, people that are just simply throwing rocks at people going to get their hair done at Trump, please remember their spark of divinity.
But even that restaurant, haven't you ever eaten at that restaurant? They had to shut it down for a while. They
didn't even make the news. Was it
16th floor? Yeah. And now they're changing their menu and they're lowering their prices and they're trying to get clientele back in there.
Well, I'll tell you, that 16th floor, that was the best $25 gin and soda I've ever had. I remember it well.
I remember that one glass of wine I had there once that was $22, and I remember never going back.
You need a cosigner to eat dinner there.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And, of course, they made big news during the congressional hearings that featured one android named Mark Zuckerberg talking about Facebook and social media and what Facebook is or is not doing and what it's been doing since, frankly, as with respect to content and content management. What it's been doing since in terms of rating the quality of content, the veracity of content, the propriety of content on Facebook. And, of course, central to that discussion was Diamond and Silk, who got
shut down, basically, by Facebook.
Defenestrated at YouTube, yeah. And then there was a rapprochement, and they got a tweet, and a romance budded. And we want to check in to see how that romance between Mark Zuckerberg and our friends Diamond and Silk, the first ladies of punditry, are going. They join us now. Diamond and Silk, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Thank you for having us.
So how is it going with you two? I know it's early stages of the relationship, but tell us all about it.
Oh, well, I don't know. It's sour.
We're in marriage counseling.
Yeah, that's right.
What happened? They sent you a tweet. They're going to make it all better. What happened? What happened?
You know, we look at, well, that was just around that time when he was up there and had to testify. But after all of that, everything went back downhill. We're still getting complaints that people are not receiving notification. We're not showing up in people's news feed. People can't watch our videos. People have been mysteriously unliked from our page. Tons of complaints. We have 1.6 million followers. With 1.6 million followers, you would think when we put out a video or we put out content, it will explode. You know, we will get Goddard up to almost a million in views, but that's not happening. Okay. So Facebook have a lot of work to do. There's also somebody out there parading that they are the official Diamond and Silk fan page, which is a lie, and putting up a lot of content. Now, that is, we've already been in contact with Facebook about that, and it's been 48 hours. I think the page is still up. So we're looking at Facebook, the trickery, the foolishness that they do, you know. When things calm down and you don't like what we say, you can't take out the censorship bully whoop and think you're going to bully whoop us back into silence. It's not going to work. I believe that this is being done because somebody is trying to win on the other side. So what's happening is a lot of conservative voices are being silent.
Diamond and Silk, let me tell you what I think is happening. I think Mark Zuckerberg wants to keep you all to himself.
Well, if he wants to keep us all to himself, he need to let me speak. Let us speak, because there's a lot of things going on. You see the stuff that's coming out? The stuff that we talked about back in 2017 is now unfolding. It's crazy.
Wow. So this fake fan page, is that what it is? Do you know where it's?
It's a fake fan page. It's a fake fan page. It was able to garner about almost 70,000 people to join. Because right after we went up there to the hill, this page mysteriously just popped up.
That's
We've
right.
never seen this page before.
No.
And we informed the Facebook about it. Now, keep in mind, Diamond and Silk is a registered and trademark name. And you call it the official Diamond and Silk. Now, what you're doing is deceiving the public. You know, so that's trademark infringement for
yeah,
one.
That's right.
But I'm waiting for Facebook to do their job and either take the page down or have those people change the name.
So you guys get censored, and people like Spike Lee, nobody's doing anything. I saw you guys on Fox News on Saturday bashing little Spike Lee. Tell us what he did.
Well, you know, he's trying to sell a movie called, I guess, the KKK or something about the KKK. And he was referring to the president as a, you know, the word, we use it, the mofo word.
Mofo.
Yeah.
But he was saying the whole world. He's so degrading. And so we had to get him straight about that, you know. Here it is. First of all, we don't really watch a whole lot of his movies, because if you watch a movie of Spike Lee, you're going to think your blood pressure's up because he has everybody floating on the TV. That's the one thing. That's the one reason why I don't like to watch a lot of his movies. But for him to take and try to politicize a movie to get somebody to watch it and use the president to do that, that is so derogatory. And little Spike Lee need to go ahead and sit his little stuff down. But I heard he took down his Twitter page. He must have been getting a lot of hate.
Well, and I mean, there's the Diamond and Silk influence, there's no question. So it's the stuff that you were talking about in 17 that's all coming out. I assume you're referring to the spying that was done to the Trump the Trump campaign and perhaps into the Trump administration. I wonder how you respond to former Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper, who says now that this spy/informant/source has been outed, he's happy to tell you that that was good news because that spy/informant/source was actually protecting Trump from the advances of the Russians.
No. You're not finna do no foolishness like that. You know, you're not finna hit me in the head and then tell me it's nothing wrong when I know that you've hit me in the head. This was a deliberate and malicious attempt. They spied, they surveilled, and then they put a mole inside of his campaign. Mm-hmm. Do you know if Bush would have done that to Obama, do you know the fences and chains that would have broke loose? People would still be in the streets marching today about that.
That's right.
People need to go down. Some people need to, as far as I can tell, you need to go to jail because you broke the law.
That's right.
Why did you implant a mole inside of his campaign? For what? He didn't do nothing. And if they surveilled and spied on him, I wanted that they surveilled and spy on Diamond and Silk.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people use their power for political gain. And some people, I believe, violated the Hatch Act, the Logan Act, the Treason Act, the Democracy Act, and the Ethics in Government Act.
So that was all of the above. I read that on your Twitter page. So will you guys ever trust the FBI again? Do you think it should be dismantled, or what should happen?
No. Listen to me. The way I see them trying to railroad this president, you know they do normal people like this. I am convinced that there are people locked up in jail that don't even deserve to be in jail. All because somebody tried to pin something on him. Mueller don't have any evidence of anything. He's going outside the scope. You think that Jeff Sessions would take up for the American people? He's somewhere out of Sessions eating, maybe he eating no cookie crumbs. I don't know what he's doing. You would think he would start taking up for the American people. This is unacceptable, and something needs to be done about it. I hope when this is over, the president changes his whole justice system. Start from the heads. Just start them all away
And it's time to get rid of the Obama leftovers. That's what's happening. You have a lot of the Obama leftovers still in position, reaping habit. It's time to get rid of all of the Obama leftovers.
Well, President Trump said in response to this reporting over the weekend that he wants a full investigation into the alleged spying that was occurring at the behest of these intelligence agencies in his campaign. But does that go far enough for you, or should he start reordering those agencies and rolling some heads right now?
Well, you know what? First of all, we do need to know if this happened. Let the American people know exactly what happened. And then dismantle everything. You know, if Mueller wanted to investigate something, he should have been investigating the DNC, Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton campaign manager brother, who allegedly took $170,000 from the Russians to try to end the sanctions up under the Obama administration. Whatever happened to that? And yes, the president, being Donald Trump, he was targeted, surveilled, wiretapped. Didn't the Obama administration do the same thing to journalists? I believe it was done to Donald Trump.
That's right.
And yes, something needs to be done about it. And yes, the president, dismantle these here. Dismantle them. Dismantle them all. Rebuild them back up. Because there's a lot of people that's doing a lot of underhanded things, and they're abusing their power. And I see our president being railroaded. And he's right. This is a witch hunt. This is what this is.
Do you want to hear from President Obama? I mean, with all of this going on, at least in part during the end of President Obama's administration at senior levels at Justice and CIA and FBI. What about hearing from President Obama about what happened on his watch?
Well, we don't want to hear a lie.
Been a lie.
Yeah, he's told a lot of lies.
Mm-hmm. Look at him now. He's silent. You don't hear nothing from Obama right now.
Mm-hmm. But he's told a lot of lies. So what we gonna hear another lie? The deal is that that's why he was out there campaigning hard for a crook. We couldn't figure it out. You know, normally you don't see a sitting president campaigning for the next person. They just chill until they get out of office. He was campaigning hard for Hillary Clinton Rock. The reason why is because they didn't want any of this to get out.
Oh, wow. Well, do you think this is comparable to Watergate or worse than Watergate?
No, this is worse than Watergate. And I wasn't alive during Watergate. Okay, but from what I'm reading, this is worse than Watergate.
We call this Obamagate.
Speaking of Obama, former Obama administration officials, you've got Ernie Duncan. You remember he used to rebound for Obama when he would shoot baskets in the Rose Garden. He's out now in the wake of that terrible shooting at the Texas high school on Friday. He's saying that parents should boycott their children's schools, pull their kids out of school, and don't send them back until we have more gun control legislation. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, it's not the gun. The gun didn't pick up itself and do nothing. A human being had to do that. So what we need to do is we need to discuss, either we need to do this here, we need to discuss how we going to keep these schools protected. We can either go to virtual school where kids are at home and they just do their school on computers.
Yes, with all of the technology that we have in this country right now, it's time to start online school so people can do school from online at their house.
Mm-hmm. We can either do that or they can take and do it like the TSA. They can have everything locked down like that. You remember when airports used to be hijacked all the time, airplanes used to be hijacked? Once the TSA got involved, we don't see a lot of that kind of stuff. We very seldom see that kind of stuff. That's probably what they need to do. If they can't do that, they can't afford that, then send them all home and let them do school on computer. That's it.
Do you, either of you ladies, have children?
We do.
You do? And do you feel safe sending your kids to school, or is it hard? Because I've got two kids, too, and every time there's a school shooting, I just die a little bit inside, and you get so worried.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. With everything that goes on in the school, if my baby was still in school, my baby would be homeschooled.
That's
that
right.
would just be me. I would not. Mm-mm. I couldn't trust it. Listen, these schools get millions of dollars. And we talk about gun control and we talk about all this gun stuff right now. But as soon as this died down in the media, no attention is paid to these schools. And then now another shooting has happened. We need to also start looking at the mental health of people, especially these young people, when they play these video games and when they're looking at these TV shows on television. We need to start paying attention to a lot of things. We can't blame the NRA. We can't blame it on just the gun. No, we need to blame it on the individual that decides to pick up a gun and want to go use it. Back in the day, way back in the day when your parents had guns, you knew not to touch that. I don't care if you weren't being bullied in school. You didn't think to go pick up a gun and want to shoot up the school. So we need to really start looking at some things here. And we don't need to look at it only while it's in the spotlight. We need to look at it when it's not in the spotlight and try to solve the problem. And if they can't set the schools up like the TSA, then send children home, let them do the schooling on a computer, is what I say.
All right. They are Diamond and Silk. I don't think anybody would mess with their kids. Diamond and Silk, of course, host of The Viewer's View. I hope that YouTube, Facebook situation improves for you ladies, the first ladies of punditry, Diamond and Silk. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And they joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
We've only talked about the royal wedding once.
Yes.
It was millions of people. Fox News came in first place, NBC News in second place with how many viewers watched. It was exciting, especially when they exchanged vows. And I'm playing it, and it's not working. So royal six, please.
Harry and Meghan, I now invite you to join hands and make your vows in the presence of God and his people. I, Harry, take you, Meghan.
I, Harry, take you, Meghan.
To be my wife.
To be my wife.
To have and to hold.
To have and to hold.
From this day forward.
From this day forward.
For better, for worse.
For better, for worse.
For richer, for poorer.
Yeah, I get how this turns out.
Okay, yes. I don't have controls.
Yeah, I got it.
But it was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. You know, Marx was wrong. It's not religion that's the opiate of the masses. It's celebrity. Millions watch this, so what? Millions of, I mean, present company excluded, of course.
Well,
millions of people
watched
whose opinions I'm not particularly interested in.
Oh,
I said present company excluded.
Rude.
I said present company.
Well, they had this bishop, the Episcopal, the presiding bishop, his name is Curry, Bishop Curry, and he was a little liberal. As in very liberal, especially when...
You played it. There was a sop he gave to fossil fuels.
Yeah, he talked about slavery, auto admissions.
Yeah, but no, this was, listen to this. This is pretty good, actually, especially for an Episcopal.
Anybody get here in a car today? An automobile? Nod your heads if you did. I'm guessing. I know there were some carriages. But those of us who came on cars, fire, the controlled, harnessed fire, made that possible. I know that the Bible says, and I believe it, that Jesus walked on the water. But I have to tell you, I didn't walk across the Atlantic Ocean to get here. Controlled fire in that plane got me here. Fire makes it possible for us to text and tweet and email and Instagram and Facebook and socially be dysfunctional with each other.
Yeah, that's a
hello.
That's a fossil fuel guy right there.
Did he know his audience? Ooh. Coming up on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Clearly not. He said Jesus, so he clearly didn't know his audience.
That's right.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, former Governor Rauner, is very excited about what's happening in Illinois. But I'm not, and you probably shouldn't be either. Just to encapsulate Governor Rauner's excitement.
Welcome to Tech 2018. Yay, 2018. Yay! Illinois computer educators, technology educators, but all the teachers of Illinois were so blessed. Let's hear it for all the teachers of Illinois. Yay, teachers!
Yay,
teachers!
Yay,
yay for our teachers! Yay for our teachers!
Yay.
Yay for our teachers. Yay, you're our future.
Yay, our you kids, you're
yay,
our future. Tiki. Yay,
yay,
yay kids.
Yay.
Yay,
Tiki.
Yay, Israel.
Yay,
Israel.
Yay,
Hines.
Yay,
Jewish
people. Yay. Yay, Kennedys. Yay, you're
yay,
a Shriver.
Yay, the Kennedys.
Yay, Ann Burke.
Yay,
Ann Burke. Come on, stand up. Yay, Ann Burke.
Yay.
Go Ramblers.
Go Ramblers. Yay, Ramblers. Yay.
Loyola.
Yay. Yay, Porter Mosier. Yay, Porter Mosier. Yay. Yay,
Sister G.
Yay. Yay. So a lot of excitement, enthusiasm. I don't know if it's infectious, if you're feeling it as well.
Yay.
About the future of Illinois. Yay, Illinois. Yay.
Well, it is moving future. Day for Governor Rauner and his
beautiful
wife.
New mansion.
Yay. They had a
renovation.
They had a $15 million renovation.
Yay!
They fixed the roof, built pipes. The place was a mess. It was falling apart. So it was again by personal donations that they raised.
Personal donations.
They didn't use taxpayers' money to fix this. But they're moving in today. They've been living in the director's house on the Illinois State Fairgrounds.
Yay, director! Let's give it up for the director. Yay!
The mansion will be open to the public in July.
Yay, July, favorite month, July, yay, 4th of July, yay.
So they're going to be there, and the moving company is going to be there. It's going to be fantastic.
That's great. No, it's these are exciting, heady times in Illinois, there's no question. The only problem is that the Illinois Republican Party continues to be as corrupt but not as competent as the Illinois Dems. And so, you know, it was that way before Rauner got here. But in terms of him representing a paradigm shift, no, it hasn't happened. And so this is a bit of an inside baseball story, but it tells you a lot of what you need to know about the Illinois Republican Party and why.
Yay, Republican Party.
No, I can't give you a yay.
No, you can't give me
a yay. I can't do it. Cannot
yay.
Do it.
Yay.
So over the weekend, there was the meeting of the State Central Committee, the Republican Party's executive board, basically, to nominate and elect officers, including state party chairman. And Tim Schneider was reelected because they cut a deal. Did Tim Schneider and this guy from Lake County named Mark Shaw, who's an attorney, Lake County chairman.
Yeah, what was the deal?
They cut a deal. They gave, it's another case. You have to understand here, souls are priced to sell in Illinois politics. So it doesn't take much to buy people off. Usually just a title. And that's what happened with Shaw. So because Shaw was presenting a real credible threat to Schneider with conservative members of the board that were wanted to make a change at the leadership level.
Yeah.
They just gave him a title. They made him co-party chairman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they make him like the county chairman, association chairman. And it's an interesting story because it's a story about being bought off, number one. And then number two, why we have what we have, why the Republican Party is sort of a legal fiction. And why we'll continue to get what we get is because at the leadership level, you have people that are not leaders. You have people that are, frankly, beholden to the way things are or just interested in protecting their little piece of turf or getting a piece of the action, even something as simple as a title.
Can you excuse my ignorance, but is it a paid position?
No.
All right.
Mm-mm. And so
there's a lot of perks that come with the job, right?
Well, but so here's one of them. So this is the example. So one of the conservative members of the board that was supporting Mark Shaw against Rahner's guy, Tim Schneider, is a guy named Bob Winchester from Southern Illinois. And the party, through hook and crook, deposed Bob Winchester when they had the elections for board members.
Okay.
And Shaw, when he got his title, what did he do? He turned around and stuck it at Winchester's back. I got mine, so now I want you to drop your challenge to Tim Schneider because we've cut this deal, and so you're expendable just because you had your seat improperly taken away from you. I don't care. You go away because I cut the deal. I got mine. And Winchester's not doing that. So then you have Shaw running operatives from House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Dave Donahue, of all people, who is Betty Lorne Maltese's former, and Eddie Verdoliak and Michael Madigan. I mean, this is the lowest of the low in terms of slimy political operatives in Illinois. Dave Donahue. It doesn't get more oleaginous and disreputable than Dave Donahue. He is making an overture to Bob Winchester's lawyers saying, if Winchester drops his challenge to get his seat back that was improperly taken from him, then we'll take care of his wife and his kid. Take care of.
Take care of, like, snuff him out?
No, take care of, like, give him a job or a contract or, you know, make it worth their while.
My brain, I immediately went to sinister plans. We'll take care of, meaning that they'll have a J-O-B.
Yeah, this is sinister of a different sort. This is the patronage culture.
This is gross.
Yeah, but this is how it is.
This is like our segment, Why to Move Out of Illinois.
And this is the Illinois Republican Party, right? So you have Durkin and Brady, these men of always, I mean, and I use the term men loosely, of always down there, you know, being the leaders of these surrender caucuses, generally speaking. I mean, there are a handful of exceptions, like Jeannie Ives, but just a handful. And they're engaged in the same, using your resources, taxpayers, to barter to keep the same people in charge doing the same thing. There is no reform in the offing. You understand? Mm-hmm. And so all of the high-minded or even, frankly, expedient rhetoric you're getting from people, well, you know, you have to support Rahner to prevent Pritzker. What's the difference? What would really be the difference? One will half-heartedly pursue a graduated state income tax, while the other one will half-heartedly pursue some titular reforms before he caves like he did in the first term. I mean, not that this is going to come to pass, and not that there's a real contest here, so it really doesn't matter, but just playing this out philosophically is an intellectual exercise. I mean, honestly. Here's where the Republican caucus is, because the fish rots from the head down, right? Mm-hmm. You had all these Republican senators vote for the touchstone of the cultural Marxist, the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, this thing that's been kicking around for 40 years, the Equal Rights Amendment, an amendment to the United States Constitution, that Phyllis Schlafly devoted so much of her career to fighting because it would, among other things, codify abortion on demand into our Constitution, in addition to now, in today's day and age, all the gender fluid nonsense. So you had eight senators, pro-life, you know, the people who pretend to be pro-life, John Curran out there, Downers Grove, Lamont Way, and Tom Rooney in Rolling Meadows, and of course Chris Nybo, who's like the John McCain of Republicans in Illinois, except he's much further to the left than John McCain. You know, they all rally to support the ERA. And now in the House Republican caucus, as it moves over to the House, these are names you'd probably be familiar with, or you should be, around the metropolitan area. Eddie Corrigan is running up in northwest suburban Cook. Jerry Long down in Grundy, LaSalle counties. David Olson, Downers Grove. Seth Lewis is running in eastern DuPage County for state senate. And then some downstaters, too, like Terry Bryant and Noreen Hammond, Mike Babcock, all refusing to take a position on the ERA. We do not have a party at the leadership level, and at least half of it within the caucus, that can bring themselves to oppose anything the left proposes. Do you understand? The way they want to avoid controversy is to surrender. If we just surrender, then there's no controversy. Well, that's true. And there's no Republican Party. And that's where this is headed. This is headed to California, where there is effectively no Republican Party. There's really no competition at the statewide level. You have a handful of Republicans in pockets running around with titles pretending to represent this, you know, a party organization. But they're no threat to anything. They're just window dressing to give the appearance of a two-party pluralist system in Illinois. That's where you're heading. And when it happens, it's not going to be at the hands of Mike Madigan. When it happens, it will be because of the consistent surrender of Republicans, including some who run around pretending they're conservatives, over and over and over again on the range of every issue, when it comes to leadership posts, everything. Everything is a cut me in play, or or leave me alone play. I just want my sinecure. I want my little piece of turf. That's the entire raison d'etre of the Republican Party at the leadership level and among half the caucus mates in both the House and the Senate. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand why Illinois is the worst governed state in the nation, in the nation's history.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line.
Joe and Sandwich, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you?
Good.
Good. Welcome to the doom and gloom state of Illinois. Hey, Dan, I was just wondering, with all this talk about the politicians, do you actually have an exit strategy?
Do I personally?
Yeah, you know, nothing specific, but, like, is there a line in the sand that could be drawn? Like, I'm relocating to Tennessee because I gave Rauner a last shot at turning the state around, and he's failed miserably, and my income's not doubling. I can't afford it, so I'm leaving.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you, Joe. Well, thanks for the call.
See you go.
Well,
you can still listen on the AM560 mobile app.
That's good. Way to keep your eye on the prize.
Well, you
yeah,
know,
I appreciate that.
You don't want to lose listeners.
Anne in Chicago, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask if we don't have any candidates to vote for, are we voting for the parties, Democrat or Republican?
If we don't have candidates to vote for,
nobody likes Rauner.
Should we just vote for a party label, is what you're saying?
But what's the difference between a Democratic Socialist Party and a Republican Socialist Party?
Not much. No. The Republican Socialist is an enemy inside the perimeter. The Democrat Socialist, that's the value proposition, the Democrat. So I guess that's the only distinction. So I would say that you have big government Republicans, and then you have some actual conservative Republicans. So depending on where you live, you have to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff. Who are those who are the actual conservative reform types, and who are those that are handmaidens for the other side inside the Republican perimeter? And I understand it's confusing. I understand people don't have time to pay this kind of attention like I do. But it also speaks to the failure at the leadership level, because it should never be that confusing for rank-and-file Republican voters, but it is.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. In the aftermath of that horrible Texas school shooting in which 10 were killed and another 10 injured, suspect in custody, has been arraigned. There have been some ideas proposed. Arne Duncan, former professional rebounder for Barack Obama, has suggested that parents should pull their children out of school until elected officials pass more gun control laws. There's one idea. Another idea, what do you think about that? You pull Payne and Eli out until they pass more gun control laws?
That's not going to happen.
The other idea, this comes to us from Dave Holmes, who's an editor-at-large for Esquire. It's actually a moment of honesty from a gun banner, so I appreciate that. Open letter to the NRA, he writes, I wanted to drop you a line and let you know that I now actually do want to take your guns. All of your guns right now. It wasn't always that way, but that's changed and you changed it. As American life has gotten deadlier, our kids have gotten less safe in their schools, you've had the opportunity to work with the vast majority of Americans who support the sensible reform of our gun laws. You've had the chance to preserve your own rights as we work together to keep our gun regulations in step with gun technology. You haven't, and thus, now I'm taking them all. And you see, that's obviously the position of the gun control advocates. That's their objective, I should say, of the gun control activists, even when they take a position that doesn't go as far. That's ultimately where they want to get to. And, of course, Dave Holmes finds it an opportune time to make this claim because of what the weapons the shooter used that don't otherwise comport with the narrative coming out of Parkland.
Right. He used two weapons, a shotgun and a .38 revolver, neither of which are the focus of gun control reforms.
So you got to take them all. For more on this conversation, we're pleased to be joined by John Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Center, the author of a number of books, including The War on Guns and More Guns, Less Crime. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So how about Dave Holmes now, because the NRA has failed to engage constructively with sensible reforms advocated by moderates the nation over. It's time to take everybody's guns.
Well, I mean, I guess I believe that they were heading that direction in any case. But, you know, it's just bizarre to me that they proposed solutions that wouldn't fix anything, that wouldn't stop these types of attacks, but they're the ones who posture as the ones who care. I want to do something. I'm frustrated by this also, but I want to try to get things done that would actually make a difference here. I mean, here we had a school that had won awards for the state in terms of hardening the school, limiting the number of entrances for the school, mm-hmm. you know, and it just shows that these types of politically correct solutions weren't able to go and stop this attack.
Well, what's more,
the one
Santa
thing
Fe-
that the school yeah. was in the process of doing, unfortunately, it was taking much too long, was to go and arm teachers and staff. There are 200 schools in Texas that are school districts that allow or have teachers and staff to carry. Unfortunately, this school was not one of those.
Well, the Santa Fe school had two armed police officers, and they trained extensively in active shooter protocols, but it wasn't a situation where a good guy with a gun can solve the problem. I mean, the ordeal lasted 30 minutes, and according to police, 25 of those minutes were between police officers who were armed and the gunman. So,
look,
I mean,
I think having a uniformed officer, you know, is heroic. I mean, these guys, one of the guys is in critical condition in the hospital. The problem is that a man in uniform is a target. You know, these guys, these killers know they're the person that they have to go and take out. One of them was present at the time. The other one wasn't present. If you're a killer, you're going to either try to take that person out, go to a target where they're not there, or simply wait until they leave the area and then go and do the attack.
But you're not opposed to the school resource officer. Obviously, we saw that school resource officer in Dixon, Illinois, that stopped the school shooter.
Yeah, no, and one in Maryland earlier stopped it. I'm just saying they have an extremely difficult job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the job for the school resource officer would actually be easier if you also had armed teachers and staff there. If you go and come up to a uniformed resource officer there and you try to take them out first, if they're armed teachers there, they have concealed carry, so you don't know which staff or which other people you have to be worried about. It makes it much riskier to go and take out that officer.
Yeah. And two of the victims were school teachers. One was a substitute teacher. Another one had been there for a while. But what about his father? The shooter's father, he is the one who legally owned the shotgun and a .38 revolver. They're trying to figure out, obviously, I mean, if there was a lockbox and kept the ammo separate from the firearms, you know, that would be a sensible protection parents can take. But in this case, we don't know if that's happened. But should the father be criminally responsible for what happened?
Look, I mean, this person apparently also had multiple different types of bombs. He had pressure cooker bombs. He had pipe bombs that were there. We don't know how long this person's been planning it, but my guess is the shortest time that you see these people planning these attacks is like 6 months. Mm-hmm. Very frequently a year, 2 years in advance. And the notion that you're going to be able to stop somebody who's determined from being able to go and do these attacks, who's planning it that long, from getting a weapon or figuring out how they're going to be able to go and do it otherwise, is just not serious. I mean, you can go and make it so the father didn't even have a gun. I assume the father wasn't providing him with pipes to make pipe bombs, right, or pressure cookers to go and make the pressure cooker bombs that he had there. But apparently, these were fairly well-designed bombs that this kid had put together.
Thank goodness they didn't go off.
Other than arming teachers who want to be armed with, you know, who have carry permits and the like, other than doing that, are there other suggestions that you would make for consideration with respect to school safety?
Well, you know, I can go through the list of things they're proposed, and they're talking about limiting the number of entrances. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why you have more entrances in schools. A lot of them has to do with safety, you know, fire, other types of things that can occur.
Mm-hmm.
If you have one entrance to a school and you have a metal detector, which is what they're talking about having in the schools in Texas now, and you have one guard there, it's not really clear to me how that solves the problem. Somebody can go up, you know, you have the red light school attack in Minnesota. It's a case exactly like that, where the person came in and killed the guard who was at the door there with the metal detector.
Right.
And
then,
so,
you know, you've got students queued up, then they're sitting ducks too, right?
Right. I mean, we just saw something analogous in England, where they had gone and had an explosion inside a stadium. And so they decided to go and put, additional security outside the stadium. And they had people lined up outside the stadium. And then what happened? Then they set off the bomb outside the stadium where people were all queued up to get into the stadium.
Right. He is John Lott Jr., president of the Crime Prevention Center, author of the book The War on Guns, as well as More Guns, Less Crime. John, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, just talking more about the school shooting and the responses to it. Why don't we ask what medications these kids have been put on? We chronically over-medicate our kids, and it affects the way they think. The next question would be, were illegal drugs or alcohol involved? No, I mean, it's a legitimate question, and we...
As far as we know, nothing so far. The family has not come forward and given any information. The school said he had a fine record. He has no prior arrests with police, even no run-ins with police.
So over-medication is an issue, and obviously monitoring people who are medicated because of mental illness is an issue. But then they're trying to come up with this checklist to explain cause. It's difficult. I'm telling you,
well,
it's difficult.
It's weird. I mean, if a kid wore a trench coat and it's 90 degrees out in Texas and every day he wore a trench coat, it makes me think of the trench coat mafia, the Columbine shooters. They wore trench coats all the time. He wore a cross upside down, according to one parent, and he had a born-to-kill T-shirt.
What do you want to do about it? He wears a trench coat to school every day in 90-degree heat. What do you want to do about it?
Maybe have a counselor or somebody talk to him. Just see what's going on. Check in. Just check in. I'm just saying. Just check in. A cross upside down?
Force counseling or voluntary?
If I had one of my players wear a cross upside down, I'd check in. I'd be like, hey, what's going on?
That's fair. But next steps?
I'd have to alert, the principal if I thought that something was.
So what do you do? I mean, think about when we were in school and, like the goth kids or the punk kids or the heavy metal rock kids.
Or the Dungeons and Dragons kids.
Yeah, that was one of them, right? And so.
But
I mean, you think like somebody's off center, somebody's different, somebody wears different clothes or somebody's quiet or to themselves. And then you want kind of the people going around giving you the full once over. And I just think it's not as easy as people wish it were.
I know. I wish it was easier, and I don't know what the solution is. I mean, one of the first kids who got killed, this 16-year-old girl, her mom says that he was making advances toward her, and she cut him off. And that's why she believes her daughter was killed.
How do you do that when someone says no, they don't want to be with you? He had to been mentally unstable. Nobody was paying attention to him. He's going to school wearing upside down crosses, in trench coats.
And had this purchase this Born to Kill T-shirt a month before.
Well, I mean, maybe, but obviously that parent didn't think that her kid's interaction with him was such that it was going to jeopardize her life, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, that's what I say. We've talked before these incidents where somebody has been ostracized, somebody has been bullied. I mean, I think, and we've asked mental health professionals about this too, is like, the idea is making sure kids are socialized. Is that a big part of it? And what we find is a lot of people saying, actually, no, it's not that big a part of it.
What's
a big part of it is... Yeah. And this is the difficult work. What's a big part of it goes back to, I'm not blaming the parents here. I have no idea what his home life was, but I'm talking generally, is are you raising a man such that he knows what it means to be a man?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the operative question.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, the spy / informant / source, revealed he is a longtime spook, going back to spook, the synonym for spy.
Oh, okay.
Going back to 1980.
Yeah, his name is Stefan, what?
Stefan Halper. His father-in-law was a deputy director of the CIA. He was a CIA agent. He was involved in... arguably an unethical play in the 1980 presidential campaign to get information from the Carter administration to the Reagan campaign in support of Ronald Reagan's presidency. Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept details this. He was on contract for this or that, but... paid several hundred thousand dollars by the FBI up until September of 2017, the month the FISA warrant on Carter Page expired, for making friends with the Carter Pages and the George Papadopouloses of the world. But
did you say he was paid by the FBI?
Yes.
Yeah. Then case closed. He's a spy.
Well, yeah. Spy, informant, source. Semantics are interesting, but not particularly relevant. Jim Clapper, the former DNI, was on trying to bail water. Here's his spin on the revelation of this spy and what it really means. And if you thought the Russians were good at disinformation, wait till you hear Jim Clapper.
The focus here, and as it was with the intelligence community, is not on the campaign per se, but what the Russians were doing to try to instantiate themselves in the campaign or to influence or leverage it. So if there was someone that was observing that sort of thing, well, that's a good thing, because the Russians pose a threat to the very basis of our political system.
That was a good thing that you had the FBI with a spy inside the Trump campaign. It appears.
Oh, that's their spin, because they think that they were trying to protect President Trump.
312-642-5600, Turkey.pro, yeah. Answer line, 646-36-DA, Turkey.pro, text line. Is this a good thing, having the state, the machinery of law enforcement and intelligence agencies in the federal government engaged, monitoring, spying on a political opponent's campaign? Or do you worry about the precedent that sets in a free society? Take your calls now. Adam Schiff.
Oh, yeah, Adam Schiff. Nothing to see here, folks.
A ranking Democrat on House Intel is upset about the revelation of the spy, because these Republicans who revealed his name are risking national security.
When did you become aware of this FBI informant?
You know, I don't want to characterize what this individual may or may not be, but I do want to say the Justice Department, the FBI, even the White House, although clearly not the president, has said that revealing information about this individual could compromise people's lives. It could betray a relationship with our allies. It could compromise the investigation. And the president's response, and Chairman Nunes, Jordan, and Gowdy, and others, is, bring it on. We don't care. Whatever is in the service of the president, we're willing to do. This is a dramatic and new and destructive low, I think, for the Congress of the United States. This claim by the president, suggestion by Giuliani that there is a political spy embedded in the Trump campaign is nonsense.
Yeah, it's fascinating because you know who outed the spy?
Well, the New York Times and Washington Post.
Right.
Yeah.
As Glenn Greenwald writes, they provided so many details about the FBI informant that everyone would know who it was, while coyly pretending that they were obeying FBI demands not to name him. How does that make any sense? Well, that's a question that little Chuck Todd should have put to Adam Schiff, but of course he didn't, because he's not there to give Adam Schiff a hard time or to ask probing questions.
He wants to make sure that Adam Schiff comes back on the show.
He just wants,
and
to
that's
give
him, why they do what they do.
Well, he just wants to give him a platform for his view, because that's Chuck Todd's view.
But they're scared to ask probing questions, because if they don't like it, then they'll shut him down. They'll, you know, box him out for a certain amount of time. It's ridiculous.
Well, and so as Greenwald goes on, either the newspapers believe the FBI's grave warnings and Adam Schiff's about national security and the lives that would be endangered, or they believe that the FBI was just invoking false national security justifications to hide information it unjustly wanted to keep from the public. Which is it? That's the real question. So that's the question as it pertains to that specious argument that's offered by Schiff, which is the same thing offered by Justice and FBI, which is a cover story because they don't want their behavior, their decision-making, brought into the light of day. And so that's one issue. And the other issue is the use of the FBI to run a counterintelligence agency against a political opponent. Kim Strassel on with Tucker.
Can you think of any time in history when this has happened, or when anyone thought it was okay for, by the way, the Department of Justice is being run by one political party, surveilling, electronically surveilling, and then also spying on the leading candidate and for a nominee for the opposing party running for the presidency?
I mean, think about it. If the FBI or DOJ was infiltrating a campaign for the benefit of another campaign, I mean, this is a really huge deal. And why is it not even scratching the surface in the mainstream media? I mean, everybody should be leading with this instead of the royal wedding. Royal wedding's over.
Still basking in the glow from the royal wedding.
Yay, they waved at me. Yay.
Mike in Crown Point, Indiana.
Morning, Dan and Amy.
Morning.
Hey, I just, Andy, don't hold your breath waiting for the mainstream media. It's not going to happen. My question is, who was the spy in Hillary's campaign?
So what did this spy
Thanks
do?
For the
I
call,
mean,
Mike. The
he
spy
met
who
with
loved
Sam
Hillary.
Clovis.
He engaged
what, the Trump campaign co-chair.
Yeah, now he engaged Papadopoulos and Carter Page and to a lesser extent Sam Clovis. He would
have coffee with him and befriend him. Find out.
He was trying to obtain information, or but I mean, what exactly his charge was and what exactly he reported back, that's somewhat unclear. We have some examples of emails and some characterizations of the interaction he had with those individuals, Clovis, Papadopoulos, and Carter Page. But, I mean, the granular detail is not available to us at this point. Sean in Elmwood Park.
You know, Prof, this is mind-boggling to me. It really is that we have reporters on Sunday shows that almost promote the FBI spying on its citizens. I'm telling you, we need to stop every investigation immediately. I want to know where every dollar goes, and I want to know what every investigation is. I know I'm just a citizen, and I know it's slippy. It's guys like Adam Schiff, these slip and fall lawyers, these slime balls with their gelled hair. They're better than me, and they're in the Intelligence Committee, and they get to know the secrets. I find it outrageous that every reporter wants to split hairs on what an informant or a spy is.
Thanks.
And that goes double for the CIA.
Thanks for the call, Sean. And look, Trump has said, Giuliani has said that Trump should get the details on this informant spy before he sits down with Mueller. That seems obvious. And he also reported yesterday, Rudy G did, that at least as it pertains to the Russian collusion portion of the investigation, that Mueller told him
it'd be over by September 1st, so as to not to affect the midterm elections.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting because, of course, Labor Day is sort of the traditional start of focus on a fall election. So, I mean, as not to affect, that's a nice cover story, too. No shortage of those coming from Mueller, FBI, CIA, Justice. Ralph and Rantoul.
Good morning. You know, if we want to go back and take a look at Clinton, even the Clinton administration with the 900 files that they weren't supposed to have in their possession, nobody was ever prosecuted for that. You talk about Bill, he was impeached but now removed from office. We've got Obama with Fast and Furious, all this other business. I have zero confidence that any real prosecution is ever going to happen or guilty people will ever go to jail for what they've done. How are we, the voters, supposed to have confidence in our government when we see the elite class have a different set of laws applied to them versus me? I'd be rotting in some filth tank if I did some of this stuff.
Well, thanks for the call, Ralph. Well, and you raise a good point, and I'll take it that last part of what you said, too, if it was you. I mean, think about what Michael Caputo said before Congress when he testified the other week, talking about how he's been essentially bankrupted because of this process. And for what? You know, what crime has he been charged with? Whether some of these guys are the most pristine actors or not, if you haven't been charged with a crime, but the state can essentially bankrupt you to use you as a means to try to get to other people in this sort of open-ended fishing expedition, well, that's not the rule of law either. And in terms of Ralph's question about how can you have confidence in these agencies, at present, I don't think you can.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, it looks like, Amy, that Mario Batali's next venture will be a prison commissary.
Yeah, some of the victims were on with Anderson Cooper last night on 60 Minutes, and they described this rape room. It was a third floor party room where apparently he would take the ladies up and drug them, Bill Cosby them, and then assault them. One woman wrote, she said, I remember I was sitting on his lap and he was kissing me, and then I just remember getting sick in a toilet. That's all. She said, I woke up then later by herself on a third floor surrounded by broken bottles. She didn't know where she was. She said, then I looked down at my skirt and there seemed to be two areas that were DNA stains. You know what I mean? Oof. She said her left leg was very deeply wounded.
There's a sauce joke in there somewhere. I'm not going to
Yeah, and then she confronted Batali the next day about what had happened, but the chef didn't respond.
Batali, don't forget, he was accused back in December, and then he separated from his businesses and the restaurants he owns. But now, so the latest development, and per the 60 Minutes piece last night, is these details of criminal conduct or additional criminal conduct, more serious criminal conduct, things like a rape room and the drugging that you mentioned. And he is being investigated by New York Police Department.
Yeah, well, the woman that I just mentioned, you know, she wanted to remain anonymous, but she did go to the hospital. A rape kit was conducted, but she didn't press any charges. So she declined at the very end to file a police report. There was another incident in that rape room. A manager was, after a shift, was in the back room counting receipts, and they had the surveillance camera. And so she could see what was going on the third floor. And she said Batali had stuck his hand between these ladies' legs, and she was unconscious. And so other people came in. They watched this. Then they ran up to the third floor to stop it from happening, from him going further. So why, I mean, after all that, why was he still working there?
Honestly. What does he have in Chicago? He has Eataly, right? That's him.
Eataly, yeah. And this restaurant in question with the alleged rape room is called the Spotted Pig.
Yeah, and they've
still open. It's a trendy place, I guess, or used to be a trendy place.
No, and they've separated from him. They said the accounts tonight were chilling and deeply disturbing. This was the first we learned of them. Our partnership with Mr. Batali is ending. Well, the first you learned of it. I don't know about that.
Well, the owner of Spotted Pig is also under investigation for sexual misconduct.
Okay.
Well, they're saying this runs rampant in the restaurant industry. And they want to see a stop to it. That's why the ladies came forward yesterday to speak with Anderson Cooper. You ever worked at a restaurant?
No.
You never really want to go in the kitchen. There's a lot of F-bombs and a lot of... It's not a solid Christian atmosphere to work in, I can tell you that.
I can take it, but I don't want to work in the restaurant business. Maybe Batali could be the Human Stain's personal chef in prison.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be nice, those two, reunite those two? In the joint. Good morning, Dan and Amy, and this is rather remarkable, something you won't hear me say ever. Orrin Hatch had a good op-ed in the Wall Street Journal.
Wait, who?
Orrin Hatch.
Senator Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
All right. He'll be leaving. He's a short-timer.
Identity politics threatens the American experiment, right, Hatch? Identity politics turns the American idea on its head. Rather than looking beyond arbitrary differences in color, class, and creed, identity politics separates us along these lines. It puts the demand of the collective before the sovereignty of the individual. In doing so, identity politics conditions us to define ourselves and each other by the groups to which we belong. Identity politics is a cancer on our political culture. If we allow it to metastasize, civility will cease, our national community will crumble, and the U.S. will become a divided country of ideological ghettos. Wow. Orrin Hatch.
Who knew?
That's you wouldn't have expected that if I didn't tell you who that wrote that at the outset. You'd have expected something like that from our next guest, Jason Hill, who's a philosophy professor at DePaul, and he has a forthcoming book, We Have Overcome, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. Jason, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Dan.
I want to start with make this a little bit of a Black Lives Matter festivus, airing of the grievances here. You've written a piece recently in Commentary Magazine where you detail your problems with Black Lives Matter, and they are many and varied. So why don't you give us the highlights?
Well, the main problem that I have with Black Lives Matter is that it had strayed from its lane. It started out as a legitimate movement that had voiced its concern about the unarmed killing of black men by police officers, and then started attacking Israel as a genocidal apartheid state, conveyed the idea of shutting down banks, advocating free education for all blacks, the breaking up of the U.S. economy. And I thought that there were two fundamental problems with Black Lives Matter. The first was that it had started shutting down conversations on universities, you know, protesting campus speakers with whom it disagreed with, mainly conservative speakers. So it had started massive protest stations on campus. The second problem I thought that Black Lives Matter faced was a problem with accountability. It really should be doing the proper work of going inside the black community and strategically working with police officers with a problem that is basically a black problem, black-on-black crime. Mm-hmm. It should be working with gang members and saying to these hoodlums and thugs who are committing genocidal rage and homicidal murders on its own people, what are you doing? You know, working with police officers inside the black communities, strategically working with these officers instead of doing the opposite, which is they're alienating police officers from black communities, and turn their signs away from white communities and progressive Jews whom they're now attacking, and turn those signs inside the black communities and work with those communities to remedy seemingly intractable problems that those communities face.
Well, how do you feel? I mean, the Black Lives Matter signs are still up. I mean, we, you know, how about
not just at your church?
No, not just that, but they are still up at my church in the front, you know, window and you know, other places. And that home has no hate here. I see those everywhere. Hate has no home. Yeah. Excuse me, hate has no home. Home has no hate. Shouldn't we put up a All Lives Matter sign? Would that be a good reaction?
We could just stop putting up signs altogether.
Well, signs are some signs are strategically necessary, but the problem with these individuals, of course, is that, look, they're media whores. That's the first thing to remember, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And when you place signs in the hands of people who are not ethically advised on how to use these signs, then they misuse them. So, for example, I'm a big advocate of All Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, mm-hmm. Black, you know, in the beginning, I thought Black Lives Matter had a point to make. I thought that they have completely discredited their legitimacy. So when I see a Black Lives Matter sign, I think it's so ethically tainted that I'm not impressed anymore.
Well, it just becomes Black Lives Matter is just a new iteration of the same cultural Marxism that is advanced by the left. I mean, call it Antifa, call it Black Lives Matter. The racial composition of the groups may differ slightly, but the policy views don't.
They don't, and it becomes an issue of branding on campuses nowadays, where a university can say, "Look, we are committed to diversity." So a lot of universities have offices that host Black Lives Matter movements or members, and it just becomes an issue of diversity branding, where a university can say, look, we're committed to pluralism or diversity. We have such an organization at our institution, which means absolutely nothing. And actually, you know, becomes politically nefarious when you have an organization that is calling for the breaking up of banks, the destruction of capitalism, and more nefariously, calling Israel a genocidal apartheid state with no accountability at all. How can you do something like this and no one is calling you to account for these pernicious statements?
Your forthcoming book is entitled "We Have Overcome: An Immigrant's Letter to the American People." You emigrated to this country from Jamaica. We've previously discussed your personal story, both on this show and then Against the Current, too. People can check out an interview I did with Jason Hill at upstream-ideas.com. But the subtitle, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. What is the kind of overriding message that's contained in the letter that you write to the American people in the form of this book?
Right. Well, the book is available on Amazon, and it's dedicated to the American people. It's my love letter to the American people, and it's a book that tells why America is the most moral and the most exceptional country on the face of the earth. So it's a love letter to the American people, telling them why they are the most exceptional people and why they have made it possible for immigrants such as myself and the immigrants of other people whose stories I tell in the book possible in this story, who can come to this country with absolutely nothing or very little in their pockets and make it, why there is a formula for success in this great republic of ours. It is the greatest republic on the face of the earth, and I explain in very, very clear detail what makes this republic exceptional and an unprecedented phenomenon in this world, and why the American people, with their can-do spirit, their benevolence, their anti-xenophobic, they're not a xenophobic people at all, contrary to the rhetoric that's floating around, why the American people and their republic have made it possible for immigrants such as myself and untold others that I tell in the book possible to make it, to really make something remarkable of their lives. So it's a love letter to the American people. It's an ode, a hymn to this country, and I've dedicated it to the American, to the best within themselves, I call it. And I think they love it because it celebrates the American dream that I think is still alive in an age of rampant anti-Americanism. And you know, I'm a great patriot of this country, always have been, even before I came here. And I wanted to express this to the American people, to let them know that in an age in which they're called vulgar and crass and shoddy and mean-spirited, that I think of them in quite the opposite terms.
Do you,
I think of them as a benevolent people.
Do you address the self-victimization at all? Shelby Steele talks a good deal about this, and the idea of, look, nobody's disputing the inhumanity of slavery and yes, how devastating it was. But for people that are alive today, to sort of re-victimize themselves for the purpose of prosecuting that matter, it makes no sense. The only one who's standing in your way then is you. And why would you want to stand in your own way in terms of accessing the paths to success that are available in this country to people regardless of color? Sort of this is, I guess, maybe the other side of the coin that you're discussing.
Absolutely. I have a whole section on the cult of victimology. And I deduce myself and the self of other black people who are Americans, who do not see themselves as victims. And one of the points I do make is that, you know, a lot of things may happen to you that are not your fault, but everything that happens to you, whether it's your fault or not, is your responsibility. It's your responsibility. Your life is your sacred responsibility. So there are lots of things, whether they're due to sexism, racism, ageism, all the sorts of neologisms and terms that we now come up with, they might not have been your fault. They're your responsibility. Your life is your responsibility, and you're not a victim. At least in America, there are real victims. You meet in a car accident, you become a paraplegic. That's a real victim. Uh-huh. In a country that provides you with an endless number of resources from which to recoup from tragedies or from any form of, I hate to use this word, but sort of systemic oppressions from which you think you might be subjected to, there are resources. There are ways in which you can pick your life up and make something. So I completely demolished the cult of victimology in this book.
Well, and it seems to me, I mean, it's just like another way to think about it. Why would you want to spend your life as somebody else's political mascot? What a waste of a life, right?
Yes, and what a misanthropic view of your compatriot. Because if you're a victim and you see yourself as a victim, what must that say about how you see your fellow citizen? You must see that person as your perpetual oppressor. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible, horrible way to view your fellow human companion or traveler. It's horrible.
No, you'd
and it's a lie, first of all.
So it is a lie?
I think it's a lie. I don't think most Americans are oppressive and want to see other people oppressed and kept down. I think quite the opposite. I think Americans like to see people thrive and flourish. I have lived in this country for 32 years. I came here when I was 20, and I lived in a deep South in the high, in the mid-80s where people thought, oh, you're going to the deep South, they're racist there. And I was a young 20-year-old struggling to put myself through school. And at every moment, I did not see, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, of course, but speaking in very generalized terms, I've witnessed people celebrating my achievements, Americans I'm talking about, celebrating my achievements, saying, you know, we're proud of you. What they don't want is a sense of entitlement. What they don't want is a sense of you owe us, we owe you something. When you stand on your own two feet, as I certainly did, and you accomplish something and you work very, very hard for it, Americans are actually proud of you because you give them some sort of spiritual fuel for their own lives. If you can do it, you send a message on the order of, I too can do it. The American dream is possible for me too.
He is Jason Hill. He's a philosophy professor at DePaul University here in Chicago. The book, We Have Overcome, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People, which you can get on Amazon. We Have Overcome, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. Jason Hill, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.